The Monday Footy Review with Jimmy Bartel.
Bartel, clever, brilliant, unbelievable, actually. Jimmy with a bit of magic.
That's a great little play on that. Clever, brilliant, unbelievable, actually. Jimmy with a bit of magic. And that's what he brings to us on a Monday morning on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, gentlemen. How good is footy? Where are all those people that said the game's, you know, no good, we need to change it, let's have 12 aside, let's play with tennis balls, let's create all sorts of new rules, jumbo goal squares. You know, all the doomsdays of the game. Half, where are they now?
Well, they're having a spell for the moment because they're enjoying
all of you.
Footy, Jim.
All of you. Where are you? All of you. All of you.
No, well, let's...
All of you,
okay,
buddy.
Let's get... No, well, let's just start straight then.
Got him.
No, because I think it's a good point that we sort of touched on this from the start this morning about the good teams do play positive football. The good teams do try and actually score. So... Do the bad teams watching the finals go, oh, geez, maybe we should score a bit more? Or does it actually see them doubling down in trying to stop the good teams from scoring? Because it did seem that the teams, every team that won, had an actual real intent to try and score as opposed to stop the other team from scoring.
Yeah, there's a few bits there, Whitey, to unpack. I think coaches know how good their, after a while, know how good their team and list is. And as you said, double down. You know, when they come up against good opposition, they slow the game down, they take the air out of it, they play what we call boring football, don't we? Like the way they play. There's also clear and distinct styles and being brave with your style and backing it in. Yeah, we've spoken about the Saints and the Dogs. You know, even the other top four sides, Richmond play a distinct style. We know how Brisbane play. Talent as well comes into that. But the point I've been making and banging on forever and a day is the finals are good teams playing each other, so you see good footy. So if you go on the Wayback Machine, when we used to get the game of the round or Friday night footy and Saturday night, we'd see the games of the round. So we'd see footy at its absolute best. We wouldn't be watching every single game and have access to every single game. And that's always been my point. There's been good games and bad games of footy. You should judge the quality, the standard and how the game's being played on finals football, because that's its pinnacle.
Yeah, that's seemingly what we've seen, Jim, in the last little while. Your point is interesting, Whitey, about how to play good teams. What do you do against good teams? Do you try and limit them, restrict the good teams? Because more often than not, as a rule, good teams score. That's just the way things happen. Do you restrict them, or do you take them on and try and find a way to beat them through an attacking mindset? Clearly, the easiest thing to do is to defend, to try and defend, and bring it back to a more arm wrestle, more of an arm wrestle as opposed to a free-flowing affair. And it's seemingly a protective mechanism to not make yourself look too bad as opposed to trying to make yourself look good.
Yes, that's true, but I think Collingwood, we went into that game watching it on Saturday night thinking, gee, how are Collingwood going to be able to stop the Eagles from scoring with Kennedy and Darling and Ryan and these guys down the forward line? And Collingwood thought, you know what, we're going to go and try and score ourselves. And they scored their biggest score since round three because they were prepared to take the game on a little bit and be a bit more expansive in offence, move it quickly and give their forwards a chance, particularly early in that match. And I just flip it back the other way and I look at Geelong and think, geez, Geelong, you know, you've got that weaponry. And I reckon they were the most conservative of all the teams across the course of the weekend, and they're the team that didn't win.
I think something that was very evident on the weekend is that particularly the Geelong-Port Adelaide game, the St Kilda Bulldogs game and the West Coast Collingwood game, is that the winning team went after something particular. So Port Adelaide went after Tom Stewart in that game. They wanted to take him out with Brad Ebert. St Kilda, they went after Caleb Daniel. They dragged him back to the goal square, which never happens to Caleb Daniel. Geary was a really effective player. He kicked a couple himself, handed off another goal. Then in the West Coast Collingwood game, Greenwood went after Tim Kelly. Tim Kelly had 12 possessions. So you still got to identify what the opposition, how's the opposition going to beat you? You still got to identify that in the final. You go after that And it doesn't need to be trickery, Whitey in finals or Jimmy. All it needs is something that you go, okay, if we can shut this down, it's going to give us a much better chance to win. And I thought those three teams did that really well on the weekend.
Yeah, couldn't agree any more with that, Rama. Spot on. Also, to the fact that going back to your first point, Whitey, about why do, you know, sort of bad teams or lesser teams, why don't they attack? And I think we've spoken about this a lot. I think, and it's even more emphasised with the short quarters this year, but I think that a lot of coaches, and we use the T20 term a lot, they try and get the game deep and then have a chance of winning it.
Yeah.
So, like, if you just shut the game out, and it's been borrowed a bit from NFL too. We're all NFL followers.
Absolutely.
And, Bill Belichick of the New England Patriots, if he knew he didn't have the talent, what he'd do is he'd close the game down, and then you play almost a four-minute game. The last 4 minutes, that's it.
Yep.
Right, game on. And a bit with AFL, like, we're seeing a lot of teams now, they know they can defend as a whole team, and you drag the game down, and with 10 minutes to go, let's open it up and have a crack at winning it. If we don't, you don't look too bad losing by two goals, do you?
No, I agree with you, and I don't think... I think it's unavoidable, because I understand why teams do it. I truly do. But I also think we saw on the weekend, we saw some high-quality football played, and I think there is a big gap between the good teams in the competition and the teams that were watching over the course of the weekend. There does seem to be a significant gap.
Can I ask you, gentlemen, then, we always talk about there's a difference between playing the game not to lose and playing the game to win. Do we feel like the mindset shifts in finals? Like, you're actually going out going, we're playing to win, whereas, as we spoke about, a lot of games during the year are set up so not to lose or lose poorly. Does that make sense, what I'm asking you guys? So there's a definite mindset shift.
But that's an optics thing for those clubs, Jim, as well. Like, you know, you talk about not losing... You're not losing poorly. So that's just, okay, we can't go out and lose by 8, 10, 12 goals, because it's just, that's the knock-on effect. So particularly early in the year, clubs go, well, we just can't have that because simply members won't sign up. They won't sign up and we just won't get the numbers and we won't have money coming in flowing into the bank. Then a coach towards the end of the season when he's fighting for his career, he'll go, if I have two or three of those losses, I may not have a job next year moving into the future. So I think definitely in the home and away season, there's that, let's not lose by too much so we'll make the game boring. I think, yeah, finals, you're right. It's a little bit different. But if you have a big loss in finals, you come in for much more criticism. You're analysed a hell of a lot more than in the regular season.
Yeah, well, and there's no tomorrow for most teams in the finals. So you do play to win because you might as well go down swinging. Whereas in a home and away fixture or a season, you've got options, you've got time, you can build yourself, or, you know, just keep it steady if you want, or you can go as hard as you like. It depends on your mode and where you sit in the scheme of things, which is different to a finals campaign.
Yeah, this might be hard for you to answer, Harf, because we know the way you see footy, and you're one who likes to see the talent shine, but you are the only proud bucket hat wearing coach amongst the group of us.
Coach of the year, don't talk about it.
Reigning coach of the year. Should be four-time reigning coach of the year. But do you sit there in coaches' meetings? So if you came against a stacked side in your time as a coach, in whatever, you've coached in so many different competitions, have you gone in your match committee and said, yeah, talent, paper-wise, we don't have it, so do we set the game up to make it slower and dour?
No, I try and find a way around it. That's just a philosophical thing for me, and that's one thing that I've always liked to do, is because it's the way I wanted to play, Jim. I wanted to play with a bit of flair and expression and find a way to hit the scoreboard and be attacking. You've got to be able to have modes and phases of play, but I can honestly tell you I've never gone into a game planning to try and make it a slugfest. Because I don't think we can win. Because funnily enough, I always think we can. Doesn't matter where we are on the ladder or who we're playing, I always think we can. Maybe I'm stupid. Every chance I'm stupid, but I always think we can.
All right, I won't go to Jimmy here first. I'll go to Rama and you, Harf, on the Geelong-Port Adelaide situation. I know that was the Thursday night game, but the reality is Geelong now play a confident Collingwood this week. Do you think Geelong are positive enough? Is the intent positive enough when they go into games? Do you think, or do you think on Thursday night they were just beaten by a better team? Like,
I'm not as down on Geelong as everybody else. They didn't play well on Thursday night, but realistically they still could have won the game.
Like, at 17 shots Hawkins, to 13.
Yeah, that's right. Hawkins kicked 0-5. So, and I know people will go, well, geez, the Trent McKenzie matchup worked. Well, did it really work? He had 6 shots a goal. He kicked 5 behinds plus 1 out in the full. So that he was a pretty good player, just didn't kick straight. What I did think is with Geelong on the weekend, once Port Adelaide took away their strengths, Geelong couldn't flick the switch back. And this is the problem in finals. Once a team gets momentum in a final, it's very, very hard to shift that momentum back. So what Port Adelaide actually did to Geelong is they made the field wide, they switched the ball a lot, made their defenders move, and they didn't like it. So who could honestly say before the game, if Charlie Dixon doesn't take a mark in a Port Adelaide final, they're still going to win the game? But that's not possible, really, when you think about it. Now, they had a lot of other players with a contribution. Stevie Motlop, obviously, with 3 goals. But Geelong will look at that game and go, look, we didn't play our best, but we're still pretty close. We just need to tweak these things slightly.
I'm with you, Ram. I'm a long way from being down on the Cats. They were beaten by a much more efficient team on the night who beat them at clearance, had clearance dominance over them, and that created field position, and they protected that territory better than they've done for a long time, and Geelong had to find a way through, and they did often. I mean, 5 goals 12 to 9 goals 4 was the final scoreline. Yep. They got looks. They Port Adelaide defended really well their defensive 50, and they forced Geelong wide, and that's why they ended up with 5 goals 12. So they had a plan in place. If they were going to get it, they were going to get it into bad spots and make it difficult for them. With a hostile crowd, the pressure of finals, and in the Cats' recent history, I don't know if that plays a part in the psychology of the players, but it certainly, I reckon, might have had an effect on the Port Adelaide, and they would have used that coming into this game with Ken Hinckley at the top there. They were brilliant, the power, but the Cats were a long way from Port. But having said that, Whitey, they are under enormous pressure this week. If they go out to straight sets this year again, they are under enormous pressure.
In what regard?
Yeah, who's under pressure?
The fact that they are absolutely under pressure. They've won 4 of their last 16 finals,
and 3 of those were in one campaign back in 2011.
Yeah, who's under pressure? That's
Geelong.
The question we're asking.
Geelong's under enormous pressure this week.
What are you saying then? If they don't win this final, they're going to rebuild.
Well, they're going to have to rebuild. They've got the oldest list in footy.
You can't keep doing the same thing.
But they have. They do keep doing the same thing.
That's right.
They keep getting back to top 4 and things like that. I think that's a bit of what Chris Scott, I'm not saying what he was trying to say, but he was trying to get across, go, well, part of the point I felt like he was trying to make is, yeah, I've got a bad record, but because I keep making it. And there seems to be that acceptance where we keep making top 4 and we keep putting ourselves in that position. So I'm a bit with Rammer. I go, yeah, the pressure will be the record, but what's that going to equal?
What do you want to do?
It's your definition of success, isn't it? What's success for Geelong? That's, their definition of success will be different to the Western Bulldogs, or let's say for this year, or St Kilda for this year.
There is no disagreement, Half, but I'm a bit with Rammer. We'll talk about it. We'll say there's pressure, but what will be the end result?
Okay.
If they win,
they're not... Yeah, no, but they're not. We're talking about the list. They're not sacking the coach.
No.
Apart from maybe someone retiring or usual trade free agency period, what will happen?
Well, they're going to have to find a way get past that phase if it happens, Jim.
I'm not disagreeing, and I don't think Rami, you're disagreeing either. But this whole build up of reflecting on the Cats' record and then like there'll be drastic changes is just not going to happen.
I don't think there's a suggestion that there's going to be dramatic changes, but Geelong have won 4 of 16 finals.
Yeah, it's bad.
Of their last,
it's really bad.
That's not good. Now, so I'll flip it back and say, will players be concerned, worried? Would it be in the back of their mind about how they've performed in finals in recent years for that to be a record? Right. Or do you think they can just block that out?
Okay, so where would you prefer to be, Whitey? Winning 4 of 16 finals and qualifying for finals, or being in St Kilda's position, only playing in one final series since 2011?
I think it's two separate arguments. But that's what you're talking about. You're saying they're going to be under pressure.
So under pressure, you're saying, well, things need to change, and Geelong potentially need to go, they need to look at their list and potentially rebuild it.
I didn't say that at all.
In a different way.
I didn't say that at all. But I did not say that at all.
We've got 2 plus 2 equals 7 here at the minute.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't understand the pressure. The pressure's there to win.
The pressure
that's
is.
That's on every team.
The pressure is they have a brand of football that sees them finishing inside the top four in most years in qualifying matches. And then in finals, I would question whether their game style suits finals, because their record is their record.
But this is back to that philosophical question I asked, that the mindset changes in finals. So the Cats are better than anyone else and not defeating themselves. And this is this game style of, you know, you play slow, you build it up from the back half, you're really set behind the ball. But you're coming up against really good teams who are willing to take that on, and this is where they come a little bit unstuck. I think it in future, would you look for some more speed out of your back half, a player who really runs and carries or take the game on? Because you look at their back six mix-up, there's great defenders, and they're intercept defenders, but they're all slow with the ball. Tell me who plays with any speed with the ball in their back half. Now, Stewart is probably one, but they get him right back on the last line. Tell me another one apart from young Clark who hasn't established himself yet.
Tui's the other one, Jim, but they're not playing him in that. They're playing more up on a wing or even a little bit of half forward at the moment, but where he actually takes the ball and tries to run or at least kick over a line.
See, I think he used to, but I reckon in the last 18 months, 2 years, because of where he is in his career, he's a kick first, go back, use his kicking power, which is a good kick. But I don't think he's the run and carry player that he used to be. Mm. Yeah, have a look at sides. They've all got that point of difference across the back line. You look at Port Adelaide, they've got it with Byrne Jones and a host of others.
Yeah.
Brisbane do it. Yeah, they've all got that Hooley for Richmond. Yeah, they've all got that sort of one who can break a line with their feet first.
All right, so Whitey then. Okay,
David Wojcicki.
So you're Chris Scott this week, okay?
Yep.
You're saying they're under pressure. What would you change this week in Geelong's team?
I'm saying they're under pressure. They're absolutely under pressure.
Are you saying they're not running?
I'm saying you would change. I'm asking you what you would change.
Okay, I'm changing. Yeah, okay, I can answer that very quickly. I would firstly have Patrick Dangerfield playing in the midfield and not playing in the forward line. In my view with Geelong, it's a mindset thing. They need to be braver. They need to take the game on a little bit more because they've got the weaponry to do that, and they play passive football and they let the opposition dictate the way the game is played too much, in my view. And if I'm Nathan Buckley, in massive writing on the whiteboard, I am writing 4 wins out of 16 games in finals. Collingwood, to the players of Collingwood, take the game on, be brave, and hit the scoreboard and see what happens.
Yeah, you're not answering the question. I'm asking you what you would actually change structurally within Geelong's team. Patrick Dangerfield to the middle of the ground, that's one move.
Yeah, but I don't think in a lot of ways with Geelong, I don't think it's necessarily changing a lot of things other than changing the intent for the way that they play. So a lot of it, we've seen it from Geelong. They can play some breathtaking football when the intent is to be positive and not to be passive and not to move the ball slowly and almost invite the pressure. Give themselves a chance. That's all I'm saying. Now, I'm the one here that hasn't played the game, but I watch Geelong and there's no team, and I have no emotional investment in Geelong, but there is no one that frustrates me more than watching Geelong play. Because they've, and Geelong supporters get frustrated with the way they play. Because they see all these brilliant players, they set themselves up with a lot of experience, they're one of the oldest teams in the competition, they're in it for winning now. And then when they get to the finals, I just don't think that they play as positively as they could. That's all I'm saying.
What I love about this, finals footage brought out the passion in the whole panel. It's magnificent stuff. And that was the Thursday game. That was a long time ago. We're going to get through the other three.
But it's actually about bringing that conversation forward, and that's what makes the final with Collingwood so intriguing for me, is that in a lot of ways the Magpies feel like they've got nothing to lose. And so they can really take the game on now. Now, of course, they've got something to lose. It's a final. But I reckon if we look at it from a mental game looking forward to this weekend, geez, I tell you what, Collingwood would like to fancy themselves.
Yeah. I know which camp I'd rather be in, Jim.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you're a good camper, Huff. The last time the Cats played them, guess what they kicked? And they probably played the slowest they ever played. Five goals,
35 points, something, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So that's right.
Speed. They need speed. And to answer your question, Rammer, it'd be first, you'd be backing again. Surely Rowan, Myers, Ablett couldn't be all that cold or shut out the game all at once like they were. Fantastic for Port, so it's a tick to Port. But I'm just saying from a Cats point of view, surely we can't have these three down. Now, all Australians, well, let's just play them in their key positions in Menegola and Guthrie. Let's not try and be too clever with our mixes. Like, game in the balance, no disrespect, but you probably don't want Delhouse, Atkins, Duncan as your centre bounce squad, which you've never ran with. It's not disrespectful to those three. It's not disrespectful to those three. You've just never ran with it. So why now? The game's in the line, in the balance. Maybe if you want a structural or position shift, if you're going to go with the same squad, I'd like to see something different from behind the ball, or you bring in someone who can do something different behind the ball. Because when you've got Kolodziejczyk, Henry, O'Connor, Blitzarves, Stewart, Taylor, that's all intercept the ball, go back behind the mark, find the safe one. Collingwood would want that.
See, Whitey, that's changes. They're changes. Yeah.
But you've already spoken about speed, so there's no point just talking about that. No point going over that again, Rammer. We're like a bit new stuff, fresh stuff, which is what we'll get after the break.
Let's go.
You're emotional?
Let's take a break.
I know you've got vested interest in Geelong and Chris Scott. I understand.
No vested interest at all.
I understand the investment your company's got. No. It's okay. It's okay.
Half in his tent. He's a good camper. He wants to get a break.
Let's get to a break. We'll come back. There's three other games on the weekend. We need to get our teeth into it. There's some great coaching in that, which we want to talk about as well. We'll do it after this on The Breakfast Club.
Across this sporting state, RSN 927's Breakfast Club.
Oh, I just thought we gave Ryan undisciplined free kicks in the back end of that second quarter. And the reality is that was the difference in the game. I think there was, 250-metre goals and a couple other goals we gave away through stoppage. You know, discipline, that's disappointing. You know, we control that, so we're going to get better in that part of the game. You know, every now and then it rears its ugly head and unfortunately it's on the big stage. So, really disappointed.
They were affronted, is what they were, by the Brisbane Lions, who put up a fight and they didn't know how to deal with the Tigers on Friday night. And it cost them the game. 10-9-69, the Brisbane Lions. Richmond, 8-6-54. Brisbane now have a home prelim in a couple of weeks' time. And Richmond take on St Kilda on Friday night at Metricon Stadium has been their venue of choice. A bit closer to home for them, and another hour down the road for the Saints. So a bit of a play there from Richmond. But they were, Ramo, I'll go to you on this one first up. They were very, very unusually behaved, Richmond, on the weekend. They almost thought that they shouldn't have had to deal with the stuff that Brisbane were throwing at them, and they responded accordingly.
Yeah, and Damien Hardwick summed it up. That undisciplined acts, particularly in that second quarter, they gave away 12 free kicks in the first half, 450-metre penalties. Lockie Neal then with a 100-metre penalty kicks a goal just before half time. Momentum swung. It's the Thursday night game when Ebert kicked that one just before half time. They're huge momentum swings and they're very hard to capture in finals. But Lockie Neal kicks that goal, the crowd gets involved, his teammates get involved, and then really it's off they go. But again, I'm not down on the Tigers because they had their opportunities late in that game. Bolton kicks a goal, and then it's obviously reversed with the right decision as it hit the post. Yep. They go there, they go back to the centre of the ground. It's 5 points the difference. But credit to the Lions. I thought it was a real coming of age game for the Lions on Friday night. They hadn't beaten Richmond since 2009, and they simply had to do it to be contenders. Last year, obviously straight sets, Richmond in that first final. But they had as Whitey likes to talk about, they had a real intent, didn't they, Whitey? They played attacking, enterprising football, and they got the reward.
I think in a lot of ways, I know Collingwood's win over West Coast is seen as the statement game and all that sort of thing, but I actually thought Brisbane's was the most impressive performance of the weekend. All things being considered, you talked about their record, you talked about the bounty on a win, getting through to a home preliminary final, knowing the grand final's also played at the Gabba. This is the one they had to win, and they did. They put that sort of that mental stuff to the side and just played the way that we've seen Brisbane play throughout the home and away season, and they thoroughly deserved their win.
Well, they're the story, certainly here, Jim. Just the ability to respond to being bullied basically for 10 years by Richmond, and certainly in the 4 years that Chris Fagan's taken over. We can go back a long way and talk about the historical references there, but Chris Fagan his team had been bullied by Richmond for 4 years, and they finally got the chance to stand up, and they did it on the biggest occasion that they've taken them on in.
Jim, the one part I think where Richmond can improve next week, they were a little bit handball happy on the weekend, and I think that had a lot to do with structurally not having Tom Lynch forward. Jack was obviously their key forward, but Jack's probably morphed into a different role with Lynch being there, where he's up and around sort of the half forward line, moving more. They had 161 kicks, 128 handballs, so I think we'll find on Friday night against St Kilda they'll look to kick the ball a lot more than they did.
Yeah, agree with that, Rama. They probably didn't have that long down the line kick option, when you get held up. But I think they also, with Brisbane, because of their midfielders and their willingness to get forward, sides, if they can win the ball back and then break that, the transition by hand, they feel like then they can get Brisbane on the counter, which has been in previous years where Brisbane gets scored against heavily is the counter. So goes inside their forward half, gets scored against by breaking it back. But I think all of you touched on it, and it's what impressed me the most with Brisbane is that word maturity. The maturity they showed, not only, I just highlight the Cam Rayner, Trent Cotchin sort of situation. Yeah. That was in a nutshell. Yeah, Cotchin, all right, I'm going to grab the young boy, roughly him up, which is fine. Finals footy, skipper trying to exert himself over a young star. But Rayner just spun it on its head. It's like, well, I'm not taking this. And, fought back. And then within a couple of minutes, composure, rams home through a massive goal. You sort of went, hang on, this is a lot more mature Brisbane side. You think of the second quarter, Richmond absolutely coming at them. They didn't get scored against. Now, Brisbane in previous years, when the opposition came at them, they were almost where Carlton is right now. They'd have four, five, six goals kicked against them in a quarter. The fact that they held strong and then answered back is maturity. And we talk about, having the little demon on your shoulder about finals. Brisbane didn't win a final last year. And the fact is, when the opposition came at them, they didn't quite hold firm, whether they were defending the ball or when they had the ball. So this hurdle that they jumped over, the mindset must be so positive now for Brisbane going forward that, yes, we stood up under a fierce attack, as Half said, against a side that has really schooled us for the last 10 years. We physically stood up. And then we also had the maturity to, when the big moments came, we stood up as well.
Two really important performances for Brisbane. First being Charlie Cameron. Obviously, Dylan Grimes has had the wood over him for a number of years now. Charlie Cameron finally played a different game against Grimes. He stopped wrestling him. He got up the ground and started to move and started to use his legs to kick three goals. The second one was Daniel Rich. Daniel Rich off halfback. We talk about, at half, you spoke about taking yardage in games. Particularly in finals. He had 18 kicks and two handballs. His metres gained was something like 650 metres. Now, his left foot is absolutely lethal, but the composure and the experience that he showed when he had ball in hand, he owned the game, and that was really, really important for the result in the end.
Yeah, he's had a big back half of you, I reckon, Jim.
Yeah, half. I listen to you as a coach. I love listening to you. What's one sort of line that you always use early about shopping early?
Shop early. The old Charlie Sutton. It's one of the great lines in footy, and it will stand the test of time. Shop early, avoid the rush. Set your game up as early as you can.
Well, Charlie Cameron, and I was watching him. Now, the rewards didn't come early for him, but it, what you were saying there, Rammer, up to halfback, re-lead, repeat lead. Yep. He had Grimes really pink in the face. You know, you could see towards the end of the first quarter, there was a boundary throw-in where he didn't quite win the ball. It was up near the interchange. But the repeat effort for Cameron, it wasn't just going down to go to the back half to get a kick. It was come up, lead, repeat lead, do your work across the ground. And he wasn't getting the reward, but you saw as the game went on, he was just... He was getting distance and distance and distance from Grimes. Like, Grimes is still very, very good, but the fact is Charlie identified his strengths, which wasn't, as we know, just standing in the goal square wrestling.
No, they're very good, the Brisbane Lions, Whitey. Very good. And the Tigers don't lose any face, I don't think. But with Tom Lynch coming back in, they'll be relatively competent, I would think, this week.
Well, I want to ask both Rammer and Jimmy this question about Richmond. You've both won AFL premierships. Richmond loses that first final, which is uncharacteristic for Richmond to lose. Sorry, Daniel. it's uncharacteristic for Richmond to lose finals over the last few years. Do they lose any confidence at all from what happened against Brisbane, or does it just almost give them that sort of slap in the face to sort of put themselves into gear? Are they any less confident about winning this year's premiership today than what they were this time last week?
No, I don't think so. Whenever something happens with Richmond, we always highlight the fact, well, if any team that can handle it, it's Richmond. We spoke about double-fisting Souvlaki's about 4 weeks ago, and what was the first thing we said? Oh, if any team that can handle 4 Souvlaki's for 2 men, it's Richmond. You know, the whole social... We love using gate, social media gate with Brooke Cochin. Any club that can handle it's Richmond. So like, they've just built this sort of confidence and inner belief that they're good enough. Well, do you guys disagree? Like, we always say that. Like, anything comes up, we go, Richmond can handle it.
What this now gives a chance is a Geelong-Richmond grand final, because they swap over sides of the draw for finals, so...
One game at a time. Thanks, Rammer. One game at a time. They've set up the clash with St Kilda. What a performance it was from them on the weekend. First finals campaign in a long, long time against the Western Bulldogs. They set it up in the third term with a 4-goal-to-1 term and hung on for dear life. Got a little bit toy, Jim, late in that game with the Western Bulldogs. It came hard in the back half of that last term, but they'd set it up. They shopped early, Jim.
They did, half. And it was a bit like schoolyard marks up for most of the day there. They put 20-odd contested marks. And we spoke about this. The great thing about St Kilda is they've got a distinct style of football, and even their selection. It's almost, you'd want to think, a little bit old school, the selection. 2 genuine rucks, key forwards, key backs. Like, it's almost like you're picking them all in the key post. They're all 200 centimetres nearly. They played to their strength, and they couldn't get the game on their terms for any longer, and the Dogs still had a chance to win it.
Yeah.
It was extraordinary.
I think St Kilda looked down the aisles in the first quarter half just to see what they actually wanted, and then those second and third quarters, they went hard. They kicked 3 in the second quarter and 4 goals in the third quarter.
Did you just use a shopping analogy on top of a shopping analogy?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I did.
Shop early, and then you went and looked down the aisles.
Yeah. Knew what they wanted, and then attacked it.
Yeah.
No click and collect.
Well, but the Saints, they played a very, very smart game first.
Yeah.
One, they isolated Caleb Daniel with Jarryn Geary. That was just a brilliant move, because I've never seen Daniel get taken as deep inside defensive 50 all year. Now, how that happened, I still can't quite work out, because usually the Bulldogs play with a deep defender, and whoever, it's like a handover. It's a handover, but 3 or 4 times in that first half, Daniel and Geary were in the goal square together. Geary's obviously going to outmark Daniel. It was too easy. They then had to move Daniel, who had become a really important player, obviously, for him in the last quarter. He had 10 possessions and was involved in almost everything. But the double teaming of Tim English and how that played out, Ryder was terrific. I thought he was probably the best player on the ground on the weekend. And Marshall had another good game. So he just... English tried his hardest, but simply Ryder and Marshall were just too big. They're too big and too strong, yeah, and moved him out of the way, Whitey.
Yeah, Whitey, just before you jump in there, just on that, Caleb Daniel and Geary, what he did was, he didn't just try and camp himself back at centre bounces and stoppages in general play, but as soon as Saints got control of the ball, he charged back. So Daniel had to take the matchup because that's how you notice it was always on transition when the Saints won the footy and they came down. He got back to the goal square. Whitey, sorry.
No, I was just going to say the best part about St Kilda's win for me is this moneyball approach almost that they've gone with over the last couple of years. We actually saw a lot of their recruits stand up for them in that final, and it wasn't just Dan Hannanbury. You'd even go as far back as Jake Carlisle, but Dougal Howard, Paddy Ryder, Zach Jones, they all did do what they were brought to the football club for.
Moneyball, you get the players a little bit cheaper than they are. I don't think the St Kilda got those players cheap.
Selected specific players to play a specific role, and they played that role very well for their team in a final.
The other part in those second and third quarters, what St Kilda are able to do is when the Bulldogs win the ball, they're able to squeeze the field. They like to get their defenders up a little bit higher and start to defend the ground like that. When St Kilda caused turnovers, they just went. They went hard and they ran and they were manic with their ball movement through the middle. Like Brad Hill didn't have much of the football, but at times some of his running was just off the charts. Hannanbury, Dan Butler, Jack Loney, they just ran the Bulldogs off their feet.
It is interesting. I mean, we analyse it because St Kilda won and they thoroughly deserve their victory. As you both said, or all said, they set up their win early. But at the end of the day, when you look at the inside 50s, it was the Bulldogs that had 16 more than St Kilda. And they've lost by a kick. And if there was almost a mark there at the end, the Dogs would have had a shot to win the game at the end of the game. Is this just a question of the Bulldogs' complete wasted opportunity in that match? Or was it just that they would have been lucky to pinch it at the end?
Those numbers, 17-4 in the last quarter, I think it was. And a lot of repeat stuff going back in. St Kilda clogged it up and the Bulldogs are trying to find a way through. So slightly skewed, but your point's valid. And it's one of the challenges for the Bulldogs going forward. I think Rammer and Jim is finding a system that works, a personnel that work in that area of the ground, that forward half, that forward 50 for them. It does seem to be one of their biggest challenges, being able to find a group of six players, seven players that can consistently hit a scoreboard effectively, because they do get a lot of looks, because they get a lot of ball, Jim.
Yeah, but if you have a look, though, and you can find it on all sorts of footy apps and things like that, where shots were taken, there's inside 50s and then there's quality inside 50s. And I always go back a couple of years ago when Melbourne had about 75, 80 inside 50s against the Cats and got beat by 80 points. Now, in your mind, you can remember a lot of inside 50s where they're really shallow across the top of 50. Caulfield comes over and picks them off. That's an inside 50. But you think we're the Saints, they're inside 50s, top of the goal square, in the channel, a lot deeper. They got the ball into probably that 60-70 and got deeper. You can have a bucket load of inside 50s, but they can also hurt you because that's where sides can launch from.
That's exactly right, but this is the problem with the Bulldogs, that they don't have the players to kick to, it seems. Their entries were just horrible watching them, all throughout the game. I think they need to completely relook at how they structure up that forward line to so that they do kick the ball perhaps a little bit more direct when they go inside 50 to give themselves a better chance at it. Something's got to change there.
Yep. That's no good for the Bulldogs. They get to lick their wounds and come up with something else for season 2021. But the Saints are through to take on the Tigers Friday night at Metricon Stadium. We'll come back and talk about West Coast and Collingwood after this because that deserves some conversation.
Do we have to?
Yes, my word, we do. My
Our
word,
producer's
we do.
Been hanging out, Joey, for this conversation all morning.
He's set the button for record. He's about to press it.
Which adult wears a football jumper to work?
The mighty Jumpy Natara can do whatever the hell he likes. He's a winner. He's a grinner. He'll talk about it after this.
Welcome aboard The Breakfast Club.
Darcy Cameron, his contest in the ruck is good. He's a natural ruckman. I mean, we've played him forward a few times as a second ruck. I just thought the balance was right to share the load amongst those two boys and try and keep the heat on a player who is an All-Australian ruckman this year for a reason. No, he's fully fit. I've heard that. But no, Broads is fully fit, has been all year. So he's cherry ripe to attack next week and whatever's beyond that.
That is Nathan Buckley, the coach of the Magpies, after their victorious performance against the West Coast Eagles Saturday night at Optus Stadium, 12-4-76 to 11-9-75. 1 point the margin. The Eagles at home don't lose too many finals. They did on Saturday night to the Magpies, who set it up early. They shopped early as well, Jim, and avoided the rush, but they were dynamic all the way through. And just think about this for a second. Brodie Grundy at the start of this season, signed a 7-year contract as one of the biggest stars in the game. And they've gone into the biggest game of the season, and I'd love to have been in the coaches' meeting, and they said, you know what we should do? Our best big man, and one of the best in the competition, we should sit him out of the centre bounces and take him away from Nick Natanui, let the other guy just punch him up for a bit and try and neutralise, and then get him in the second phase to the next fella, the second stringer for West Coast, and we'll exploit him that way. That'll work. We'll sell that to Brody. He'll be happy about that. It was an amazing plan, Jim, and it came off.
Yeah, great coaching, and they executed it well. So you can have a great plan, and if they don't execute it well, you can look like a dill, can't you? But you think the last time West Coast played Collingwood, the highlights in your head is Natanui jumping straight over the top,
yep,
hitting forward, yeah, and the West Coast got onto it, and they almost played the perfect game. They had only about 30-odd inside forward 50s for about 20 goals, and a lot of them came from the centre bounce. Now, Cameron's just a little bit taller and a little bit longer, and when that final couple of centre bounces, when Grundy went off with about 6 minutes to go, he'd taken a couple of nice marks around the ground, but that centre bounce, Cameron was able to neutralise it. So Natanui, where he's so dangerous and they need the game to be won, he hits forward, and if their midfielders don't get it, he's the one. It's almost like he's hitting it to himself with his momentum. Cameron was allowed to neutralise it. The ball dropped down in the centre circle, and it gave the Collingwood's mids and all that a chance just to swarm in and nullify the biggest strength for the Eagles, which is their centre bounce, and scoring from centre bounce work.
Well, they were enormous. It was a great plan, and because it makes, when you break it down, it makes a bit of sense. If you can stop him going through the contest at centre bounces and having to work around the circle a bit more, and then you get Grundy to come in and take number two, get rid of Oscar Allen and cause him grief in the ruck, it makes perfect sense. Now, it was probably the only way that they were going to win that game. Talking about finding a way to win, as we were at the start of the conversation, Jim, at the top of the hour, finding a way to win, believing you can win by finding another way. The Magpies did that. Whitey spoke about earlier this morning about their intent to be a bit more dynamic with their movement. That was absolutely part of the conversation. But they found a way, a little bit out of the norm, but they found a way to do it. Because I don't think going into it, too many people outside that 22-plus coaching staff thought that they could do the job on the West Coast Eagles.
No. It was set up during the week. Like, almost everything was playing into Collingwood's hands. The travel factor, the staffing caravans, the dirty pies, the motivation factor there for Collingwood was put on a platter for him, really.
But a lot of that was rubbish. A lot of that was,
of course, it was. But it's still motivating. But, it's still motivating, yeah, Whitey.
But I think it's a bit. I think it's a bit deeper than this. And we spoke to Taylor Adams about this on Wednesday. The Eagles went into that final underdone. We knew that. Like, yeah. Shuey hadn't had a lot of footy going into the finals. He had 14 possessions. It was pretty much non-existent. We talked earlier about the job that was done on Kelly by Levi Greenwood. Dom Sheed had 17, but didn't have a lot early. The West Coast Eagles were pretty disappointing, but it was emblematic of their year. Like, if you look at even in that game where they kicked the first goal after half time, and I think most people expected the Eagles just roll over the top of Collingwood, but they just couldn't get it going. They just couldn't get it going, and Collingwood deserved their win.
Goal kicking, goal kicking, goal kicking. So Mychek, Cox, and DeGoey kick 8 goals straight, and then you've got Kennedy and Darling that kick 6 goals 6.
Yeah.
I know that's a very simple way to look at that, but 8 goals straight to 6 goals 6 out of your key forwards.
Yeah, and Mychek kicks almost the accidental goal on his left foot, and DeGoey kicks his snap goal, which was what DeGoey does. So it wasn't an accident. But, yeah, I think it was the Eagles just they had things conspire against them all year. And then in the game that mattered most, they just couldn't get out of third gear, and Collingwood could.
So that critical last moment where West Coast win the ball back, cross half back, goes into the middle of the ground, handball, then our man Taylor Adams just puts up the brick wall and just stops the... Who was the West Coast player? And it just Archie. Stopped the West Coast player in his track. Who was, sorry?
Archie, was it?
Archie.
Was it Archie?
Yeah, Archie. Then what's been missed is the next part of that play. Pendlebury then scoops on the loose ball. But rather than just jamming on his boot to get distance, he's got composure. He hits the target out wide on the wing there, and then just sucks that more time off the clock. But look, it was probably Collingwood's best finals performance in many, many years. The way they went about it, the way they win, no side bottom, no Jeremy Howe. It was a brilliant performance.
We often get a bit biased in here with our boys, but Taylor Adams, he had 9 disposals in the last quarter, and he does it a lot, Taylor, particularly this year. When the game is on the line, he goes to another level, and he did it again in some crucial moments in that last quarter for Collingwood.
No, he was brilliant, Taylor. He's emerged as a genuine star of the competition, All-Australian, of
course,
this year.
He's a leader.
A star of the competition. Speaking of, I know it wasn't a great weekend and a great outcome for the Eagles, but only it only enhanced the reputation of Liam Ryan as a footballer in this competition. Yeah. He is something else. That matchup with Maynard was brilliant. It was old school head-to-head footy, and it was brutal. It was physical, and it was verbal, and then they respected each other at the end of the contest and moved forward strongly. But it was just magnificent, that contest. And Liam Ryan, for a guy his size, I don't think I've seen many more, Jim, play as capably in all facets of the game.
Yeah, he's legitimate. And I think when he first come in, you know, the flying Ryan and the hangers and the good goals, you sort of thought, which happens to a lot of small forwards, is it all sort of sizzle, like, you know, all highlight reel? But he's just showing everyone he is a legitimate, rounded footballer, like a genuine factor in all games he plays now. He's kicking a bit. After that smother in the pocket off Gaff, and then picked it up, I still can't understand how he generated the power to keep it flat. Like, it's a good kick, and you go out and you kick with mates, and you muck around, say, if you're half-time at the local footy, you know, you try and tuck one around the corner, but then all you're a little bit loopy or you've hit the back out of him, it was like an absolute dart that almost went behind him. It was extraordinary amount of skill.
Yeah, it was. He's something else. He's Liam Ryan. Not to be, though, for the Eagles, and they lick their wounds.
He chews gum like a 1980s Australian cricketer, just sitting on his bat at the non-striker's end.
Now, it sets up a magnificent Victorian semi-finals week, and imagine if it was games in town this week. Richmond and St Kilda on Friday night, Geelong and Collingwood on Saturday night. It's going to be magnificent. We'll watch it on the box, of course, because that's all we've got, but it's going to be a great second week of the finals with Port Adelaide and Brisbane just sitting there smoking their pipes, watching them all bash each other up, awaiting to meet them in a fortnight's time. Jim, great to see you. Great to talk to you on a Monday after a big weekend of footy. We'll do it again next Monday.
Really enjoyed it. Thanks, guys.